you so much. It's an honor to be here. I had to get up at 4 this morning to catch a plane, and I'm not a morning person, let alone a 4 in the morning person. So a little bit of a zombie version of myself presents itself today. If at some point I start just spouting gibberish, well, that's probably just me reading my poems, but if I if I pass out, feel free to give me a kick and I'll snap back to it. So when I was a youngster, there was a playground near my house that I went to all the time. And one day, one of the swings broke. I don't know how, because I wasn't there, but the next day I saw the chain kind of violently pulled from its socket and yellow hazard tape around the spot. And it took the city crews a good long while to get around to fixing this. So every day I'd go there and see this place where something had happened and see the warning tape and wonder why this sort of reminder of some traumatic event was left there day by day. And it sort of obsessed me a bit. I started wondering, like, who was on the swing? What happened to them? Are they okay? And it was a sufficient obsession that I grew up to write a poem about it. So this is called Playground Incident. This is the swing that snapped, hurling the boy. Limp rubber, chain coiled in mud. Blossoms of blood bear witness. The boy was flung, fussed over, whisked away with his busted wrist in the declining day. Here's the wake of that panicked evacuation. Hanged seat and soil askew. One mitt dropped in the breaking of the fall. The shadow's voices leave, fallen leaves imprinted with alarm. Doctors rested the wrist straight. They've seen worse. The boy will live. Rust winds like vines around the pool, the hollow socket where the chain sprang loose. Flakes of paint, once livid, cling to the crater's lip, and evening raccoons snuffle, prod the mitt. One day he will sit down in a dim office, having received his first promotion. Rungs of light penetrate the blinds. He stares at pallid stacks of files, time wild and tasks fulfilled. Gripping the armrest, he senses a widening to and fro inside his gut. His temples pound and are rent with it. Later tonight, there will be rain. Mud will overwhelm the red drops. Steadily, the mitt's wool will decay, sodden, trodden under other boys' feet. All evidence will be ground away, the swing fixed. The chain complete. About a month ago, I drove from Windsor, Ontario to Edmonton, where I'm staying right now, and went down south rather than over the Great Lakes, through the prairies and through the plains. And sadly, a great number of insects end up sacrificing themselves to one's need to get somewhere. I didn't write this after that trip, but it dovetails with it. It's called Parked Truck, Moosomin, Saskatchewan. The Dodge Dakota's gooey with accumulation, innard sap flecked with ex-anatomy, geodome eyes off dragonflies, mandibles unmoored, mustard splotches where the hoppers hit with phlegmy plosives. Doors form pallets of prairie pigment, gaudy thorax bits, plump legs of pollen-gilded green. The windscreen wears it, too. Wipers cocked like mantis arms have toiled. The chatty guy at Shell applied a real long squeegee. Mostly smears is all they made, but still a smear beats out gut strata. Yards away, amid blonde bristles, evasive billions chatter and scheme. So I was working at, I was teaching English in downtown Ottawa, and I would take my lunch at a sandwich shop that wasn't so comfortable to sit in, so I would take my sandwich across the street to this extremely lavish office block downtown. I don't know what companies or government offices it housed, but it was ludicrously lavish. There was sort of a jungle with little wooden decks jutting out over it that you could sit and eat at. So I did. I sat there with my sandwich, and I sort of observed the infrastructure and the number of staff involved in maintaining this very artificial, lavish environment. And I started scribbling little couplets down on my sandwich napkins until I had a stack of napkins that I thought I could start to work a poem out of. So this is called Super's Report. Weeds discovered huddled at the tower's base in cracks were gassed. At last inspection, none had sprung back. Feisty but mortal, a gangsta tag was wiped from the north wall, leaving the merest smear like soup on an elder's bib. Some vague flaw vexing an exec's window was effaced, a mendable warp in her expanse of plexiglass. All seems well, and the marble's polish gleams unscuffed and chipper. The dining room revolves, revealing dreamy views of gloaming vista. So I sign off, yours truly, humble super, bowing out, handing my torch to the night shift guy with his paunch and laden belt. The chimes of his keys will chatter in halls until the dawn's cheeks blush. His name tag will be accurate, his hounds on their leash robust. Let's turn in those hordes of us who need not know the night, snore ensconced among the folds of incident logs unfilled. Dozing, let's patrol the fabled room immune to grime, or sweep with brittle straw the pristine floor that greets the newborn feet. Pupils shifting under lids, wait for the report, the gun that starts the race or kills the lights. Which, incidentally, is the title of this book, The Gun That Starts the Race. I don't have any copies for sale because in my temporary living situation and my sort of madly nomadic life, I don't really have stuff. So I don't have books. They're in a storage locker in somewhere in Scarborough, and I can't go get them for you. But if you're interested, I can direct you to or where to order from online sources. So I believe I just mentioned being in Windsor, part of this crazy nomadism. And I've lived in Windsor a few times, and when I mentioned that in an email to my friend Jim Smith, a wonderful poet who lives in Toronto, he emailed me back, and he made an allusion to something that you may have heard of. It's a strange phenomenon called the Windsor hum. There's this kind of sound that I guess sounds like a hum. I never heard it when I was there. That allegedly keeps people up at night. No one knows what it's from. The source hasn't been pinpointed. I think the prevailing theory is that it comes from Zug Island, which is on the U.S. side of the border. It's an island where all sorts of industrial activity takes place. It's sort of a hideous cluster of factories and the like. So the theory is that Zug Island creates some sort of hum, and people in Windsor are kept awake by it. So when I told Jim Smith I was in Windsor, he emailed me and said, this is a direct quote, "Beware the Zug Island mole men's strange vibration chorus and drinking society." And as soon as I read that phrase, I had to write something. So I wrote this. One thing I should mention is that in downtown Detroit, as you probably know, there are tons of empty buildings, many of them burnt out or in disrepair, and many of them occupied by squatters. And one of the most prominent of these, a huge old skyscraper that's burned out, has spray painted along the very tops in huge letters that you can see from many spots in downtown Detroit, "Zombieland." So there's a reference to that. This is called "The Mole Men of Zug Break Into Song." Action is afoot on Zug. Half mole, half man, sinister technicians toil at smashed machines, four floors under factory facades. Night shift over, squirming in their bunks, they dream of light perceived, dream themselves a penthouse with its windows gone, high atop the squats of Zombieland. Even in their sleep, which isn't really sleep but sluggishness, they hum through staves of whisker, forepaws raking air to keep the beat. Hush, child, rest quiet now. The moan that woke you up is nothing dangerous, not yet. The mole men are confined at Zug. Their sonic labors haven't broken earth. Only their lamentation has gone free, nosing a path to our doors. I'm just going to break for water. You can use this break for whatever sustenance or otherwise you need. Or not. Okay, so I'm going to read a couple more pieces here. I haven't ever read this one, but I thought I would give it a try, test it out on you guys, in light of the recent lunar phenomena, the blood moon and the enormous moon and all that stuff. This is pretty much a flight of fancy. It's called Sad Steps. And it's inspired by the old Philip Sidney poem, "With how sad steps, O moon, thou climbs the sky." With how sad steps the astronaut caddies for clients, retrieving pitted balls from the sand trap. A sea of tranquilizers mutes his maundering. Lunatic too long, he languishes, all pallor and prolongation, pulled out of shape by the weightless days, slung among spheres, mooning over a waning crush. At night, with airlocked lids, he feasts on one dear ray of recollection, her on the porch at the ball, diaphanous, making her demand, surely in jest, for how could she have known how he would seize a whim, dangled, hang from it his mission? If you would sail to the ends of the earth and off for me, you'd earn my love. What could he say? The man had lost his wit. One expedition couldn't pay its bills, he took another, sank into the long monastic rut. He bends to scoop another ball. Astronauts of the brash new breed, orbital beats in their helmet phones, flash with clumsy mitts their hand semantics, cut glyphs in crater walls and mime delight each at the other's antics. Blown shots don't bother them. They don't recall and wouldn't understand what space meant once. Egg and closing shell, a set of stairs going always up but never rising, path of milk spilled in a creek, or path of lumbar muscles generating heat. Whatever you liked, ad infinitum too, for what that's worth. She's dead by now, perhaps. No matter. She isn't what he loved or wanted to, her prodding not the real cause that thrust him far from ground and landed him upon this mournful face. On to the next hole, then, the tea and lunar dust affixed. The globe on the tip of the tee and the smack of the club on the globe lifted off down the lonely expanse, the long, lonely expanse, the greenless expanse of the green. And before reading one last one here, I just wanted to say a huge thank you to Deanna for bringing me out, and also Ross Lecky at the University of New Brunswick, and to all of you for being here. Thank you so much. This last one, there's not really much to say about. I'll just read it. It's the final poem in the book, so I'll leave you with this. It's called Surface Tension. Water striders run this lagoon. I am knee-deep and watch them. Sure bosses of the turf, they stroll brazen over taut water, gather fallen insects, manna from sky and overhanging tree. How do they do this trick, not sinking? I'm told on Sundays Peter did it too, until his faith fled. Jesus rolled his eyes and saved him. Instinct and surface tension, these I learned from Mr. Bowman in a room stocked with jars and microscopes. The insect's genes instructed. Fluids, a community of molecules that cling more tightly on the brink of air, huddle at the threshold. Nervous highway for weightless travelers. So here I am, feet firmly planted in mud, no miracle for me. Willows stoop to sip the surface, drink anxiety. A dragonfly, expired, floats, and a strider finds it, pierces exoskeleton. Faith in instinct feeds you, leads you to pray. What if the water relaxes, decides fear has not served it well, opens its maw? Striders and their victims and leaves and twigs, the detritus of shady land, will enter that loosened depth and vanish. But the water can't. I know this. There's nowhere to flow. Tension locks the lagoon's jaw, muscle too clenched for any hope of peace. Forest presses in. Some years ago, a rapist prowled, placing paper bags over the heads of his victims. At the town's border, fear drew in its nets. We kids were hustled indoors every dusk, forbidden at all times to enter the woods. I obeyed. But sometimes I burned to stride to the town's trembling meniscus on legs made light by faith. Closing my eyes at night, I test the sheath of willow, push in, find this lagoon. Tension held, I walked, better than my namesake could, on water. Thank you so much.